everyone. It's exciting to see you all.
Oh, wow.
Hello. So for the sake of time, I want to keep all the housekeeping items sort of very quick, and I'm probably going to email them all. So please register so that when I send out an email, you'll get it and you'll know what's going on and what materials and resources and all that. I'm not going to worry about any of that today for the sake of time. But I will say the Cub Life app did not have the correct registration. It was registering for fall until this morning. So if you registered on the app, just please re-register on the app because they had to switch it last night because it was for the fall class, not the spring. That's my email if anyone has any questions. And this is my challenge and homework for the next 3 months is just read or listen to the books of 1 and 2 Kings. I think 3 months is an adequate amount of time. And you know, listen in big chunks if you're a listener, or read in big chunks if you're a reader, or you can read a little every day. But just get a feel for the stories that we'll probably be in. We'll probably be in 1 and 2 Kings throughout this portion of the class. So I chose Old Testament stories for a few reasons. They're often neglected and sometimes confusing. They're also actually easier to interpret and study than a lot of the other genres, like wisdom literature. And I think they, what was my third reason? This is the most important reason. They reveal who God is. That's the one. That's all that I was after. On the road to Emmaus, Jesus took the two disciples aside and explains the Old Testament in light of himself. And it's a really exciting scripture for me because I love the Old Testament. And I'll just read it. And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. And at that time, none of the New Testament had been written, so he's just talking about the Old Testament. And listen to their response to his teaching. They said to each other, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures?" And that's my goal, and I hope God does that here through this class and through your understanding and reading of the word. So let's ask the Spirit's help to interpret the scriptures for us. God, we need you desperately. You are our God, our interpreter, our light. Please be a light and interpreter for us today as we seek to open your words and understand who you are. And I ask that we would be transformed by beholding who you are in your scriptures. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. So today, it's going to sound a little more preachy than teachy, because I'm just going to give you a feel for like what we're into. I'm going to ask participation. I'm going to call out people. So just tell me. I don't want to be called on if you're really bothered by that. But we're going to be moving at a rapid pace. So you're free to ask questions, but I'm going to bowl over you a little more today. And then in the future, I'll take longer time and just be like, yeah, what do you mean? And let's talk about it. And Sandra, we can answer all your questions. That's true. We can attempt to pretend to answer all. All right. Very briefly, the general idea of method in the simplistic form is this chart. In the bottom left corner, we have our passage. And we want to get to what does it mean for us and today and our friends and everyone we care about. But rather than just jumping over there, we're going to follow this pathway where we ask ourselves, what did it mean for that audience at that time? And we reflect on how does that relate to Jesus? And then we, using all those pieces together, we apply it to what does it mean for us? And that is a safer route that will help us not make things up that aren't supposed to be there and feel more confident about the answers we get. And I think it was generally the way it was intended to be read. And that's what Simeon Stress is about, is trying to read the Bible the way it came to us, in a book, in a form, with a language, with a text, with a genre, and all that. So let's get into it. All right, I hope you all brought Bibles or a phone or something, and let's open to 1 Kings 2. It's a very long chapter, so I'm gonna borrow some of you for a reading. And who can read the first 11 verses? And Craig, give it all of your dying David gusto might.
All right, so this
please feel free to stand.
This is 1 Kings chapter 2, 1 through 11, right?
Yep.
Okay. When David's time to die drew near, he commanded Solomon his son, saying, I am about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, If your sons pay close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Moreover, you also know what Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me, how he dealt with the two commanders of the armies of Israel, Abner the son of Ner and Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed, avenging in time of peace for blood that had been shed in war, and putting the blood of war on the belt around his waist and on the sandals of his feet. Act, therefore, according to your wisdom, but do not let his gray head go down to Sheol in peace. But deal loyally with the sons of Barzillai the Gileadite, and let him be among those who eat at your table, for if with such loyalty they met me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. And there's also with you Shimei, the son of Gera the Benjaminite, from Bahurim, who cursed me with a grievous curse on the day when I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now therefore do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man. You will know what you ought to do to him, and you shall bring his gray head down with blood to Sheol. Then David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. And the time that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned 7 years in Hebron and 33 years in Jerusalem.
So Solomon sat on the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was firmly established. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, and she said, Do you come peaceably? He said, Peaceably. And he said, I have something to say to you. She said, Speak. You know that the kingdom was mine, and that all Israel fully expected me to reign. However, the kingdom has turned about and become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. And now I have one request to make of you. Do not refuse me. She said, Speak. Please ask King Solomon, he will not refuse you, to give me Abishag the Shunammite as my wife. Bathsheba said, Very well, I will speak to the king for you. So Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak on behalf of Adonijah. And the king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. Then he sat on his throne and had a seat brought for the king's mother. And she sat on his right. And she said, I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me. And the king said to her, Make your request, my mother, I will not refuse you. She said, Let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as his wife. King Solomon answered his mother, And why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also, for he's my older brother. And on his side are Abiathar the priest and Joab, the son of Zeruiah. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, God do so to me, and more also, if this word does not cost Adonijah his life. Now, therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of David my father, and who has made me a house, as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today. So King Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he struck him down, and he died. And to Abiathar, the priest, the king, said, Go to Anathoth, to your estate, for you deserve death. But I will not at this time put you to death, because you carried the ark of the Lord before David my father, and because you shared in all my father's affliction. So Solomon expelled Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, thus fulfilling the word of the Lord that he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. When the news came to Joab, for Joab had supported Adonijah, although he had not supported Absalom, Joab fled to the tent of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. And it was told King Solomon, Joab has fled to the house of the Lord, and behold, he is beside the altar. Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, Go, strike him down. So Benaiah came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, The king commands, come out. But he said, No, I will die here. Then Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, Thus Joab said, and thus he answered me. The The king replied to him, "Do as he said, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause. The Lord will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without the knowledge of my father David, he attacked and killed with a sword two men more righteous, better than himself, Abner, the son of Ner, commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa, the son of Jether, commander of the army of Judah. So shall their blood come back on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. But for David and for his descendants and for his house and for his throne, there shall be peace from the Lord forevermore." Then Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, went up and struck him down and put him to death. And he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. Then the king put Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, over the army in place of Joab. And the king put Zadok the priest in the place of Abiathar. Then the king sent and summoned Shimei and said to him, "Build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there to any place whatsoever. For on the day you do and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain that you will die. Your blood shall be on your own head." And Shimei said to the king, "What you say is good, as my lord the king has said, so will your servant do." So Shimei lived in Jerusalem many days. But it happened at the end of 3 years that two of Shimei's servants ran away to Achish, son of Maacah, king of Gath. And when it was told Shimei, "Behold, your servants are at Gath," Shimei rose and saddled a donkey and went to Gath to Achish to seek his servants. Shimei went and brought his servants from Gath. And when Solomon was told Shimei has gone from Jerusalem to Gath and returned, the king sent and summoned Shimei and said to him, "Did I not make you swear by the Lord and solemnly warn you, saying, know for certain that on the day you go out and go to any place, whatever, you will die? And you said to me, what you say is good, I will obey. Why then have you not kept your oath to the Lord and the commandment which I commanded you?" The king also said to Shimei, "You know in your heart all the harm that you did to David my father. So the Lord will bring back your harm on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever." Then the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him, and he died. So the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Well, I know it was a long section. Thank you all for bearing with that really long reading. But let's start by just looking at how the text is organized. In a broad sweep, what's going on? What are the headlines that you're reading in Israel this week?
David's died.
David's dead. It's a big one, right? Yep. What else? There's no wrong answers.
Solomon's the new king and he's cleaning up.
New king, right? I can just see it on the headlines. Who will be next? Right? Cleaning up. Anything else? Others.
A lot of striking down.
It's a lot of death. Yeah. We'll just throw that in our sort of repeated repetition. Death, specifically through what means?
Sword.
Benaiah.
Benaiah, the sword, the legal system, the justice system of that time. Yep. Other themes or repetitions that you guys just heard a lot of?
Well, I noticed that David said talked several times about Solomon's wisdom.
Yes. Yep. So, David thinks Solomon is wise. And this is actually one of the questions that we probably have as readers is Solomon going to be a wise king? He hasn't received wisdom from the Lord yet, which comes in the next couple chapters. So this actually almost becomes part of the tension of the chapter, is David has just declared all these problems that he has unfinished business with, Joab, Barzillai, Shimei. And one of our questions coming to this is, how's Solomon going to deal with it? So we'll add that later. Other?
You shall not... a couple times talking about the phrase, so Solomon sat on the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was firmly established.
Okay, so throne, house, established. established, kingdom. These are all very repeated words.
Yeah, four different times.
Kingdom and established. So, you know, at first glance, we're thinking this passage has something to do about the kingdom being established, and through specifically wise and just dealings with people, specifically for justice. All right, let's. That's a good start for that. Let's talk about basic organization. I've thrown up on the board over here. I've broken this into two big sections. David's discussion with his son, Solomon, and then these four stories about Adonijah, Abiathar, Joab, and Shimei, as Solomon is judging them. And I think one of the first tools we should ask ourselves when we're reading any part of the Bible is, what genre are we in and what text type are we reading? You know you're in Old Testament history, because that's the course. But the text types I'm talking about are discourse, poetry, and narratives. Or said a different way, speeches, stories, and songs, say. So, in verse 1 to 11, what text type are we dealing with?
Is David's talking?
Most of it.
All right. Anyone disagree?
Well, that's like 1 through 9, but okay. Then 10 and 11 are narrative.
Yeah, so it's definitely a speech, and we've also noted at the beginning and end, there's a little bit of introduction and closing from a narrator. So it's embedded into a story. So it's going to have story elements, but a speech is the main focus of how to use interpretive functional features, but they're both going to help. What about 12 to 46?
Narrative.
Yeah, so we have narrative or story. Anyone else disagree or want to add anything? No? There's a lot of dialogue, right. I'll just say it. Solomon has like these, benediction is not the right word, decrees, and they almost sound like speeches. So during those decrees, we're getting like a little bit of help from looking at the way that speech will be organized. But generally, yes, so story and speech. Once we know we're in a story, we can start trying to figure out the elements of a story. What does every good story or every story have in it? All the stories that you read, any story.
Characters,
yeah. What else?
Conflicts,
also tension or rising action. Characters, tension, conflict. What else?
Plot.
Yep, this is under the bigger category of plot. In the plot, you're gonna have tension or conflict. What else are you gonna have? There's a conflict and tension. Hopefully there's a
resolution.
Good. What else? Any other elements to a story?
Setting,
yeah, the story has to take place somewhere, sometime. So now that we know we're in a story, let's focus in on 12 to 46 and ask ourselves some of these questions. What's the setting? We mentioned it a little bit. David's dead, Solomon's the new king, right? Any ideas about where this is happening, or when this is happening, or where things seem to be taking place? All right, 1000 BC, wow, that's great. And Jerusalem.
Is that in the text?
Studying it in homeschool right now.
There we go. All right, as we're walking through this story, let's start talking about the tension or the conflicts that start to arise. Are there any tensions carried over from verses 1 to 11?
Wait, David tells his son Solomon, do these things, but he doesn't say necessarily say how to do them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, deal with these people that I didn't deal with. But he said, you're wise. But he doesn't necessarily say, well, except for, let me go back. Yeah, I think he maybe does say one to die, but let me, I'd have to look about the specifics of that. But.
And he kind of says, because of promises I made, I was unable to deal with these things, but now I pass them on to you. You're wise. You will know what's best to do.
Right. Yeah. So there's, like that I said earlier, there's this tension of, is Solomon going to do these things well? Is he going to be wise? As you guys are reading verses 12 to 18, is there any tension that comes out of that? He's a character. I would love to get into characters, but there's so many in this chapter that we don't have time. So, briefly, who's Adonijah? Does anyone know off the top of their head?
Yeah. Brother of Solomon.
Brother of Solomon. What's happened in chapter 1 right before this? We're going to talk a little about context. And I wish we could, like, talk it over, but I'm just going to rely on someone who actually knows what's going on.
He basically grabbed the commander of the army at that point, the top priest at that point, and a couple of the important people, all of his brothers, and went and had a feast proclaiming himself king.
All right, so Adonijah grabbed the priestly, military, and political support of the kingdom and made a bid for the throne. And did he succeed or fail?
So they're having their feast. Everybody's saying, long live the king. And it's kind of like a private party. And then the other priest, prophet, and Bathsheba kind of hear about it. And they tell David, hey, look, isn't Solomon supposed to sit on the throne? And so David quickly puts Solomon on the throne. All of Jerusalem celebrates. And then this private party hears about all this noise happening back in the city. And from there, it's a little bit of chaos for them. Guy shows up and says, hey, this guy's actually king. And so they all flee, and it goes from there.
But, Adonijah runs for his life,
yep,
and grabs hold of the altar, just like Joab does in this story, and asks for mercy. And Solomon says, if you show yourself to be true, I'm going to use that word, I can't remember the word they use, then you'll live. But if you are treacherous, you'll die. So, there's that tension. Is Solomon young, middle-aged, or old at this point?
Very young.
And he's actually probably made king prematurely, to some extent, because Adonijah pulled this off, and they kind of had to say, all right, well, Solomon, you're king now. So, it's almost a little early. So that's just some of the context that we're dealing with. So there is some tension already with this character, Adonijah. Now, as you're reading 12 to 18, is there anything that just strikes you as, oh, this might be a problem?
Who the heck is the Shunammite woman?
These are questions that you have to answer when you read text. Who's Abishag, the Shunammite, and why is Adonijah asking for him?
Her.
Thank you very much. And why is he talking to Bathsheba about it?
And why does she say yes?
These are all good questions, and we all have to ask them. And I think one of the first things that marks off the tension here is Bathsheba's question. She says, do you come peaceably? And that just tells you something's wrong, because she has to ask, do you come peaceably? Apparently he does. At least that's what you say. Now, in verses 19 to 25, let's say we don't trust this guy, Adonijah. There's so many A's on this part of the Bible. Let's say we don't trust Adonijah. What's the next thing we're worried about, or the next rising of the tension from 19 to, let's just say 19 and 20?
she kind of hedges, makes him commit to something without him knowing what it is.
Yep. And that kind of insinuates that she has a decent amount of power. Solomon bows down to his mother, which also supports this idea that he's younger, that she still has a great deal of power and influence. And he's sitting in a chair on his right. So she's almost sort of queen mother still, with enough power to be part of the royal seat. And so now Adonijah's plan starts to kind of make a little more sense, even if we have no idea what he's doing. Somehow he's getting through Bathsheba to make a promise to get something from Solomon. Now, even if we have no idea what Abishag and Shunammite's all about, we can know from Solomon's response, right? What does Solomon's response to this request insinuate about Adonijah?
Well, somehow this marriage is going to make it so that Adonijah can become king instead of Solomon.
Power play.
Yeah, it sounds like a power play, and he's insinuated that somehow this marriage alliance, or what a marriage, will give him more power to the throne. Really briefly, earlier in 1 and 2 Samuel, you have Abner, who's warring against David in the house of Ishbosheth, and sleeps with one of his concubines, and Ishbosheth accuses him of trying to take over the kingdom. So there's this sort of understanding that if you were to unite with the previous king's concubines, you are claiming a right to the throne, and you have almost a little bit of legitimacy to it. That also happens when Absalom takes over the throne, and Ahithophel, his counselor, says, you should sleep with all of your father's counselors before all of Israel, showing yourself that I'm taking over.
Wow.
It's intense and disgusting at the same time. But yes, now we understand what Adonijah is after. He's trying to get in to the king's last servant, concubine, Abigail. Is it Abigail?
Abishag.
These A names. All right. So, let's keep moving, because we have not enough time. Where was I? Okay. Wow. All right. This turns a corner pretty sharply, pretty quickly, right? What's the resolution to this problem? He kills a lot of people. All right, let's start with who and why and at what pace.
Adonijah first.
Adonijah goes first. I'm just going to cut this whole thing short. Adonijah. And how quickly does he put this into action?
He's done.
Today. It's happening immediately. And then who does he go after next? And why?
Joab.
Actually, no. There's one more before him, right? Maybe I'm wrong.
Abiathar.
Yeah, Abiathar's next. And remember, Abiathar is what to Adonijah?
Older brother. Oh, no.
Oh, the priest.
Yes, he's his priestly support. So, Adonijah, so he goes after his priestly support next. Now he has no authority from God. And then next? Somebody said earlier.
Yeah, Joab.
Joab. And Joab is what to Adonijah?
Well, he's the military.
Military support.
Long time, commander of the army.
Yeah. All of these stories are fascinating. I wish we had time to get into each one of these and what it means and what we can get out of it. But I'm just gonna point out that the unfinished business that David wants him to deal with is not something Solomon was planning to take care of right away. But God brings about a circumstance in which Adonijah makes a bid for the throne, and he is able to deal with Adonijah, Abiathar, Joab in a row because they're all connected. And now that he's on this track, and everyone knows that he's just for doing these things because they're all connected to treason, he can move on to Shimei as if it's sort of an afterthought. And you can judge Shimei based on his loyalty during Adonijah's bid for the throne. Shimei was one of the people that did not support Adonijah. So, Shimei, for anyone that who's this guy? He's one of Saul's house, and while David is running from his life from Absalom, he says, "Get out, you man of blood," and curses him for all the harm that he did to Saul's house. And basically, and as he's leaving, almost gets his head cut off, but David spares him. When he comes back, he falls on his knees and asks for mercy. And David spares him again. And he seems to be showing loyalty. But David said, "This guy harmed me, and he needs to be dealt with." So now Solomon's in a position, he's like, do I kill him? Do I not? So far he seems to be standing firm. And so he tests him. And he tests him just like he tested Adonijah. He says, if you're a worthy man, we'll see if you obey my commands. He says, live in a house and see how long that goes for. And if you walk out, then you're done. So, just to recap of where we've gone so far, we're looking at our passage, we're studying it, we're looking at the structure, what it means for them at that time, and we've used a couple tools. We've looked at the organization, the structure, the genre, the text types, some repetition, some ideas. Let's talk about top and tail real quick. The top and tail of a section sometimes helps you, it's like a bookbinder, helps you figure out what the book's about. So for this section, verses 12 to 46, what might the section be about? And I'll give you a hint for verse 1 to 11. If I'm guessing what this section, verse 1 to 11, is about, I'll look at verse 1 and see if there's any sort of correlation with verse 11. And in verse 1 I have, it's saying it was David's time to die. And in verse 10 or 11, David dies. So this is David's death. This is the moment, you know, where you would expect his last words to be, if they're not here, but last words to Solomon, specifically, apparently. So, look at verse 12, look at verse 46. What correlation do you see, and what might help us figure out what this passage is about? Any repeated words or themes or ideas?
No, just says that the throne is firmly established in Solomon.
Throne of Solomon established, right? What's the other one? Is that the end or the beginning?
It's said in both.
In both, yeah. All right, so that's like a marker. And that's kind of what we found. So it kind of confirms our suspicions. But that's just another good, helpful tool. Now that we have all this data, we have to ask ourselves, what does this mean for those people this time? And I'm going to give you my first shot at it. I don't have the answers. I'm studying this same as you. And the goal of this class is for you guys to get a chance to do this yourselves, dig into a passage, and find this for yourself. But here are some possibilities about what this meant for Israel. That Yahweh is a God who keeps his promise. His promise to make Solomon king despite the priesthood, the military, and all Israel expecting otherwise. He keeps his promise to judge the wicked house of Eli and does so through the expiation of Abiathar. Yahweh is a God of sovereignty. He uses every circumstance to establish his king and his purposes. He will use the evil plots of Adonijah and the seemingly random flight of Shimei's two slaves to show that justice will be met. From Adonijah's own lips, we hear the truth that Adonijah does not yet believe, that the kingdom has turned about and become Solomon's because it was his from God. Solomon's establishment means a transition from a time of war to a time of peace, and all rivals are silenced, and all enemies are cut off, and all threats are eliminated. And so begins the golden age of Israel, a time of prosperity and peace and security, hinted at forever, multiple times in that passage. How does this connect to Jesus? Many ways. I'm going to pick two real quick. Jesus is prefigured in David as the anointed one who destroys Israel's enemies on every side. And Jesus is prefigured in Solomon as the wise king who will rule unopposed in an age of peace. And that time is coming when Jesus will reign on the earth and cut off every enemy and judge every human. What does this mean for you? Whenever you ask this question, it's going to be very related to what it means for them and transposed by which your reflections on Jesus were. So Yahweh keeps his promises. All Israel expected Adonijah to reign, but that doesn't matter. When the religious, political, and military powers of the world plan against what God has ordained, it will fail. Like those who lived in David's kingdom, we live in a time when men like Joab get away with murder, and where the faithlessness of men like Abiathar still persists. But there will come a day when Jesus himself will judge the earth, and the titles of priest or teacher won't protect you. And on that day, there will be those who have done heinous acts in the name of God, claiming to be doing good for the kingdom, as Joab claimed. And they may even seek refuge on that day at the altar of God, saying it was an accident. But he will say, I never knew you. And there upon the altar, the wrath of God will be satisfied, as the blood of those who cry against them is avenged. Aside from the people, many of us are like Shimei. We were once enemies of the king, and we have been shown great mercy, and we have been given a home, and the only safe place for us is with our king. And let us not grow complacent and ignore the commandments of our king. And for those of you who have been valiant for the Lord, like Benaiah and Zadok, your time is coming, for you are to judge angels, and you will stand beside the king in glory and honor in a position of authority. And that's just a very quick version of some of the things that we can get out of this passage. And they're for you, and for the future, and for your friends. And this is good news, that God is going to reign on the earth in the time of peace forever. It was hinted at in the time of Solomon. It will be confirmed when he comes to reign on the earth. So, I will send out an email with future information. Thanks for coming, and we're going to get deeper into this. If you have any questions, feel free to ask.
So,
yep.
You just did 40 minutes, what I'm sure you would have loved to have done over 4 hours.
Yes. Yes.
And you just handed a ton of stuff.
Yep.
Could you send out your notes by way of email? Because
sure.
You said a lot of good things. My brain's trying to race to catch up with you.
Yeah.
And that'd be really helpful.
The goal of this time was just to give you a taste. And in the future, we're going to dig down and figure out, let's do this together. How do we do this? I'm reading a scripture. I don't know what it means. I have no idea what it means for my life. How do we get there? And we can, and we will together. And that's what the next few weeks will be. I'll send my notes out for this.
And we'll be doing the future in a much slower pace.
Yes.
Okay.
And you guys have a lot more chance to ask questions. Say, how did you get that? Where do I get that? How do I do this? That's the goal of this, is for you guys to walk away and be able to do this. Yeah.
Is there a passage that you know you're going to talk about next week that we can read ahead on?
Yes. Great question. Next time, I think we'll be talking about Solomon's dedication of the temple, which I think is in chapter 7. I wish we could do the whole book, man. I just wish we could do the whole thing. Solomon builds his palace.
Solomon's prayer of dedication is in 8.
8. Yeah, 8. 22. Yeah. 8, 22 to probably stop at 53 or 61 maybe. Yeah, start there.
First Kings 8.
Yeah, let's do that. And read the first few verses of 9 to hear God's response, because that's just too good to pass up on.
Chad, is there like an overview of the Simeon Trust approach, like a primer or something that if we were trying to, it sounds like you're going to show us how to do this.
Yeah,
as the weeks
we're
going to
be going pretty slow pace. There are, so I'll send it out an email. There is a website. There is a course. It's geared towards teaching and pastoring, but I think the principles are important for everyone. And so that's why I jumped on. I was like, I like this for my life. I want everyone else to know about it. And there are videos. We may watch one or two or three, we'll see, throughout this course in class together.
So if they wanted to
yeah.
check into the website, what would they do?
I'll send an email with instructions of how to get to the website. And when you log in, for anyone that already purchased the course, like it's $20, you still have access for up to a full year from when you bought it. For anyone that hasn't, I think it's $19 or $20, and you'll have access to all the videos on there. And the two important course downloads that you need to look at are the outline worksheet guide that tells you how to fill out an outline, which basically does this process in 6 questions or 7. I can't remember now. They keep changing it. And the other is the study guide for Old Testament history. And that's really great too. I use these as resources. I don't want to dump a lot of homework on you guys, unless you have lives outside of this and already left homework. But if you're curious, it's great stuff. It's really good.
You should put those two on the board, maybe.
I will do that. Yep. And in the next couple weeks, I'm going to ask a few of you guys to try this and commit to saying, yeah, I'm going to try and fill out a worksheet. And we'll probably do that on the split of the kingdom, which will be chapter 12.
How many weeks from now would that be?
4. Probably. Right. Last time we got through about 2 scriptures. So
what we can expect in the next 2 or 3 weeks?
2 or 3 weeks is how to do it. And we'll focus first on structure and the emphasis and what it meant for that audience. And then we'll, in the next part, we'll talk about how to reflect on Jesus, how to get an argument and an aim for us and today out of it. Those will be the two big teaching sections probably over the next 2 weeks that will prepare for you to do your own 3 or 4 weeks from now. And as I said, I'll send this off by email because I haven't decided yet. I'm trying to figure it out. So thank you for being patient. I'm going to write those two down. Any other questions? Bell's rung. So, yeah. Free to go if you want.
But for those who are new, we've been through this before, and Chad's emails are very good. It's like you just got hit by a fire hose, and you're like, what did I just hear? So we will break it down, and very systematic, was right before you there, and stuff like that. So it's not going to feel like this normally. He's trying to do, he's trying to give a taste. He just gave you a ton of stuff. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, you should.
Just need to drink more coffee at least.
we'll sample in the coming weeks. Right?
Yeah. So we'll go slow.
Thanks, Chad.
Thank you all for coming. I hope you guys had a great time.
Yeah, it's great. It's excellent.